Hello, I'm Jennifer Kirk.
And I'm Zoe Robinson, and welcome to the TVox podcast.
Yeah, we've been neglecting this slightly. It's been a while since we last did one. It's one of those things that work kind of overtakes you, but we've got a topic today, which is something which I've noticed coming up quite a bit, and this is the subject of peer pressure in transition.
Yes, and it all comes down to there are a lot of, I wouldn't say they're high profile, but amongst our friends, anytime someone declares that actually transition wasn't for them and they may have taken their transgendered nature a bit too far.
Yeah.
It sets off debates, doesn't it?
It does a little bit. Now, we've known, we still know quite a few people who've detransitioned. And yeah, I don't think it's a bad thing to detransition for those people who've, you know, tried living in the opposite gender role and discovered that it's not actually the answer to the problems that they face. I've known a lot of people who are perhaps androgynous rather than something within the binary gender system.
Yes.
I think maybe some of this boils down to society likes to pigeonhole people. You're either male or female as far as society at large is concerned. So even within the psychiatry part of transgender treatment, there's maybe a desire to, you know, you have to choose one or the other. And I think that that's in part responsible.
Certainly. I'm very much of the opinion that it's never bad to detransition. The real life test is there for a reason.
Mm.
And life is one of those complicated things. You're never going to say, oh, this person is 100% definitely X and this other person is 100% definitely F and things like that.
Mm.
Or C or Q or whatever they want to come, whatever letter describes them. No one is going to be 100% within it.
Mm. I think also there's been an element of people are afraid of voicing the fact that, you know, maybe, you know, they don't always feel that they can be pigeonholed in a particular gender, because for a long time, you know, there's been this feeling that there's this gatekeeper mentality within the mental health service.
If you question whether transition's right for you, then the NHS will go, oh, well, obviously it's not, so you can't have funding.
Yeah, I mean, I myself went through this. I attempted to transition quite a while ago, the first time, and I found quite a bit of hostility. I mean, this was, it's about 13, 14 years ago now, and I remember talking to my psychiatrist at the Gender Identity Clinic and saying, you know, I'm still questioning. There's some days when I wake up and think, actually, it's not too bad. There are some advantages. And they just seized upon this and went, oh, well, yes, you're obviously genderqueer. Thank you. Goodbye. Don't let the door hit you on the way out, sort of thing. And then a few years later, I realized I'd been suckered in a way. And I think there's this fear amongst people that the moment that you say, you know, there's still this questioning going on, this gender questioning. It's going to be seized upon. And certainly back then, it was.
I'd like to think that it's not like that now in the NHS. I'm pretty sure it's not in private practice. But I can't say 100% for certain that it's not like that anymore and you can have questions. And that, I think, is the biggest problem. It's the myth that hangs over, regardless of whether it's true anymore or not.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've got a page on the TVox wiki about hormone myths and urban legends. Mm. So in all aspects of the treatment for transgender people, there's all these urban myths. And a lot of these are born out of, you know, a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. But also, I think, certainly more so in the past, there's been this mentality of gatekeeping going on.
Yes.
And these misinformation and myths are used to kind of control people. But on the other hand, you mentioned perhaps it certainly doesn't go on in private practice. I know we shared the same psychiatrist, and he was quite keen on using hormones even as a diagnostic tool, in that once you've started hormones, you've transitioned, why shouldn't it be okay to go, actually, I've tried it and it's not for me? And there's probably quite a few people who've gone, I'm really questioning my gender. And they go, okay, well, we'll prescribe hormones, try the real life test. And people have found, actually, that's not the answer I thought it was.
Yeah, and that's why I am very much an advocate of keeping the real life test. I think it's a very good thing that it's there, so you can give it a try. I mean, yeah, it's not going to be right for everyone, but nothing is.
Yeah, I can remember, it's probably a couple of years ago now, reading a story about somebody who, they felt that, you know, surgery would be the instant panacea to all life's ills, and they just jetted out to Thailand. Sean went out and Susan came back, sort of thing. And it isn't the panacea. And I think it's dangerous for people to think that going through full gender reassignment surgery is going to be the answer to all their problems, because it's not. And that's why the real life test is part of the diagnosis. It's the diagnostic process is what I'm trying to wrap my laughing gear around.
Exactly. It's not just there to trip you up and make you question yourself and make you full of self-doubt or whatever. It gets you used to life in the role that you think that you need. Mm. And in most cases, it turns out that actually what you thought you need is exactly what you need. But in those cases where it's not, I think the biggest problem that we have right now is that the trans community has, to a certain extent, embraced the idea of this gender binary. And it's a case of, oh, you're trans. Well, you've got a few doubts. It's all right. They'll go away. Just keep going.
Yeah, and it's almost this thought process amongst, unfortunately, a lot of trans people that if you transition, that gender reassignment surgery is the inevitable conclusion of this, and that everybody is working towards this particular thing. And I think this is wrong. And
yeah, I agree.
I mean, there certainly were support groups that seemed to try and perpetuate this, and I can remember being on one particular support group and being horrified that anybody who said, you know, well, actually, I don't want surgery, or, you know, I want to see where this goes, I don't want to rush into anything, was kind of almost metaphorically burnt at the stake for this blasphemy. I found this quite disturbing. And we're quite strong-willed people, you and I.
Yeah, but my response, I'll say this straight off. Anyone who tells me what to do in that kind of respect, my first response is to go, no, and then my second response is to punch them in the face. So I'm pretty strong-willed.
Yeah, it wasn't really possible to punch people in the face on the internet, but I remember having a conversation on a forum with a trans man who was saying, you know, actually, feel like going out in drag one last time before, in his case, it was having a mastectomy and what's it called?
Hysterectomy.
It's kind of fairly major surgery. And he said, actually, you know, for like one night only, say goodbye to the old body and go out dressed as a girl, go out and clubbing. And I said, actually, yeah, I'll dig out my old tux and I'll come with you. And we actually got a warning from the site admin saying, oh, you know, how dare you not take this all serious and treat it as a trivial matter. And my argument was, well, clothes are clothes. It doesn't really, why should it matter what shape the material got tailored into?
Well, that's it. I graduated when I was still male, and I still have the suit I graduated in.
I must admit, I can't think of any male clothes that I've kept, but it doesn't mean that when I transitioned, I took everything to a charity shop. You know, it's a gradual process, and that things like, you know, I had big feet, so I kept some very blokey shoes for a while, because otherwise I'd have had nothing to wear.
Yeah, and the idea of a barefoot woman who lives in my house wasn't exactly my idea of a good time.
No, not really. But there is, even, you know, when we were going through the transition process, I did feel that a lot of people, it's very easy to get swept along.
Definitely.
And I'm a firm advocate that every stage of the process, each individual going through it, should sit down and ask themselves the probing questions. You know, am I doing this for the right reason? Is transitioning to the point of having surgery the answer? Or is just transitioning to living in the opposite gender role but not feeling a need to go through the surgery, is that enough? And if the answer to that is, actually, I've transitioned, I'm quite happy at this stage, I don't feel a need to take it any further, then don't feel bad about that. It's perfectly respectable position to be in, and the gender recognition, gender reassignment surgery is something that it can't be undone. It's a very big step. And just as, if you were to commit yourself to buying a house or, taking out a mortgage or taking out a huge bank loan, you would in those situations ask yourself, is this something that I'm getting into having thought things through? Or am I just going, I fancy a new car, so I'll just take out a bank loan without thinking about the consequences. And gender reassignment surgery is another one of those things where you have to ask yourself the probing questions. And it doesn't mean that everybody's going to go, oh, actually, I'm not sure about this. This is a big life-changing thing. For some people, for us, it was the right decision. For a lot of people out there, it will be the right decision. But you have to decide, are you doing it for yourself, or are you doing it because the social group that you're in who are transitioning with you? All trans people tend to find this little social group of people.
It's only natural, especially over the internet.
Mm. I mean, we did. Some
of my best friends are people that I transitioned with.
Mm. But ask yourself, are you being swept along? I know I sometimes felt that there was this kind of, almost like a race. I wasn't racing, but I was conscious that other people that we knew were kind of, it's like keeping up with the Joneses. I've got to have a new vagina because X, Y, and Z is having a new vagina. You're thinking, no, hold on, stop. Ask yourself, are you having this because you feel you should be having it, or because it is the right decision for you?
But that's it. I remember a joke on one support group. Which point should I get my cats? Everyone seemed to be getting cats on that support group.
Mm.
Should I get it before I transition, or is it important for the cat to only see me after I've transitioned? That kind of thing. Or I remember one time.
How strange.
Yeah, it was basically this person was trying to push on, highlight the fact that there was a group mentality and it was all lemmings. Every single person was doing what every other person was doing because every other person was doing it.
I mean, I must admit this being, to give one example, I know a few people might sort of tuss and go, what? Oh no, I don't do that, do I? But the estrogel, which is one of the medications that we got prescribed, I've heard quite a few people describe that as like the tranny crack, feel the hit. And you can't! This is not... But
there's a small amount of estrogen that's in it that is actually absorbed by the skin. It's not going to give you a noticeable hit straight away.
Certainly, it builds up over time, and it's, to be honest, it's questionable how good it. But I've heard a lot of people kind of get swept along with this notion that it's described as tranny crack. We go, oh, feel the hit, and it's sat there thinking like, what are you?
It's all in the mind. If you're taking medication already between 4 and 8 milligrams of estrogen, the small amount that's in estrogen is not going to up your dose to the point where you will actually feel the difference.
I mean, let's face it, the fastest way you could get that into your bloodstream is by injecting it and one squirt of estrogen. Quite apart from the obvious don't do this at home kids thing of injecting it, it's still
very ill.
Because there's lots of other things in it.
Just that, but do not inject estrogen because it will block up your veins.
Mm. But
it's a gel.
Yeah, okay, well, we'll move on now. We don't try this at home, kids.
Yeah, right? Okay, well, disclaimer over. I have to admit, there does seem to be a pressure in the trans community for people to transition. If you have doubts about your gender transition, see how it goes. And there's that old joke. what's the difference between a transvestite and a transsexual? About 5 years.
Yeah. And sometimes that is true, but you know, it was something that our psychiatrist did say on numerous occasions, that he found that prescribing hormones could be a very good diagnostic tool, because a lot of people who came to him and ended up going on to hormones transitioning found that once they were on hormones, it's kind of, oh, hold on, this isn't what I want. And, you know, he was quite happy to say, well, okay, you know, you've tried it. It's ruled it out. I know back when I expressed this sort of element of, am I making the right decision, to my psychiatrist? And, I mean, yeah, this was years and years ago. I think things have changed since. You know, there was this fear that you just get booted off the treatment. But, you know, I think if you... you know, you get on the treatment and think, hold on, this isn't the right thing. You know, you should be, you feel comfortable to admit to yourself, this isn't it, but you've ruled it out.
Yeah, and that's it. Don't be afraid to say, actually, this has gone too quick for me, or maybe this is the wrong decision, or am I doing this for the right reasons?
Yeah, I mean, I don't regret the 3-4 years between the first time I tried to transition and the second time, where, you know, I tried to live in my birth gender. I don't regret that, because it taught me a valuable lesson that actually there was a serious gender identity issue. But, you know, if I'd have, you know, perhaps if I'd have rushed through things the first time I transitioned, went, no, this is for me, would I have felt as comfortable at the time, thinking, you know, am I making the right decision here? It was the right decision, but for a lot of people, it might not be.
I have to say, before I went in for the surgery, I did sit down and think, have I explored every possibility? Is this right? And I have to say, I am more comfortable myself for having sat down and actually thought it through, rather than just going with the flow because everyone else says, oh, it's right. No one else knows you. You're the one that has to live with your decision. So make sure it's the right one.
Yeah, it's something you've got to be comfortable with for the rest of your life. And you know, I think you should reiterate, you have to ask yourself these probing questions at every stage of the way. Because, you know, some things aren't reversible. So, for example, if you're a trans man taking testosterone, it will make your voice break. So even if you then decide to detransition, you'll have... a husky voice.
Yeah, and if you're a trans woman and you go through with gender reassignment, they can't stick a knob back on.
Yeah, as that was once described to me, it's easier to make a hole than a pole, which any trans man will attest to. It's the one part of the FTM surgery that...
That still needs more research.
Definitely is getting better.
Oh, yes, it's definitely getting better. But it is an important thing to say. You brought up the idea of a race. And it is true. A lot of the time, there is a feeling, I felt it myself, that things weren't moving quite fast enough. I wanted to get to the end.
Yeah.
But sometimes when you're racing to the end, you forget the fact that some of the stuff, it is reversible, but you can put it off. It doesn't have to happen at a certain time. For example, if you decide, actually, I think I'll stop at this point and wait and see. Is this good enough for me, or do I need to go on? Well, it doesn't mean that the next stage disappears.
No.
It's just you can do it later.
No. I was conscious through my transition the second time round that, you know, was there a part of me trying to make up for lost time, as it were? And, you know, there were stages where I did get impatient with lack of progress, but I think at every stage I did ask myself the questions, you know, how am I making the right decision?
That's it. Every stage, ask yourself.
Mm.
Because that's what the real life test is there for. That's what the support groups are there for.
Yeah, and don't let anybody else tell you what you feel, what you think. It's got to be something that comes from the heart, something that comes from inside you, that you innately know. I think that a lot of people perhaps unwisely focus on the surgery. It becomes this huge goal in life. And I've seen a lot of people who are so determined to get to the surgery, get the surgery, and somehow this will be the panacea for all their ills, that, you know, they forget that there's life on the other side of it. I mean, it's about 5 years since I had my surgery now. And, you know, I've had a lot of things that I've got on with. You know, I've got on with my life after it. And there can be a danger of focusing too much on that.
Certainly. I'd like to say at this point, as someone who is post-surgery, nothing changed. And this is something that really needs to get drilled into people. The surgery is good. Yes, it's great. It makes me feel good about myself. My life has not changed because of it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, ask yourself, who actually gets to see your genitalia? For a lot of people, it's perhaps, you know, a partner, or maybe even nobody. If you're not, if you're asexual, you know, your genitalia is a very personal part of your body. And yeah, maybe it's obvious to say that, but I think a lot of people lose sight of that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you've gone through transition, passed successfully, then who is it you're doing your surgery for? It's got to be for you.
Yeah.
Never have, you know, any kind of surgery for somebody else. It's always got to be for yourself.
Yeah. Because at the end of the day, you'll go to bed a miserable bastard. You'll wake up a miserable bastard, to quote Frankie Boyle. And surgery is the same. You'll go to sleep as you. You'll wake up as you. It's just the furniture's been rearranged.
Yeah, you had the plumbing fixed.
And that's it. Is there anything else that you want to mention here?
I can't really think of anything. We've kind of gone through all the topics. And I think this topic has been born out of partially, we've known a few people who've taken the step to detransition recently. And you know, I don't begrudge them that. I think that they've made what can be sometimes in the face of peer group pressure quite a difficult decision.
Oh,
but
definitely.
they have acted for their own interest. And remember, at the end of the day, number one comes first. You come first to yourself. And you know, hats off to these people who've gone, well, actually, transition has shown to me that this is not the answer. Because you know, if you keep quiet and think, oh, I can't back out now, you will be miserable with this all your life. You will, in effect, induce severe gender identity disorder in yourself if you go through a surgery that is not for you.
Definitely. You can always back out. It's never too late to back out if you decide that actually right now is not the best time, or maybe it's not right for you at all, or whatever.
I mean, I don't want
to... Right up to the point of surgery. I mean, just before I was put under anaesthetic, they were asking...
Oh, yeah,
are you sure you want to go through with this?
They do, actually. They ask you at every stage. You could be forgiven for thinking, if you were a paranoid individual, that they were desperately trying to have you not go through. But it's something that shouldn't be undertaken lightly. It is a huge surgery. And there's other things as well. Things like you're basically removing yourself from the gene pool. Removing your ability to reproduce. That is something that, you know, for me, that was a big step to take. I want children. And I knew that it was a huge sacrifice that I had to make. And I don't want to come across in this podcast like we're trying to talk everybody out of transition.
Oh, certainly
we're not.
Transition, gender reassignment, for some people, it's the right thing. It was for me. I think it was for Jennifer.
She's oh, it certainly was.
So, yeah, for those who really do want it and need it, then, yes, go for it.
Mm.
But for everyone else, think about it. Maybe it's not right. And if you decide later on, after you've thought about it, that actually it is for you, well, you can start again. You can continue where you left off. Whatever. It doesn't close a door.
Mm.
It just stops you from having to go through and then find, actually, there's no way back if I decide that's wrong.
Yeah, I think something else that probably influences, certainly gives the impression to people that, you know, when you transition, it's actually quite unusual to come across many people who are post-op, post-transition, just getting on with their lives. It's, you know, stealth is something that gets talked about a lot. And part of that is people just going on and living their life. But it becomes quite difficult to talk to get information from people who've been through the whole process and get, you know, their perspective on, you know, was this the life-changing decision that you thought it was? You know, was it the panacea to all life's ills? And, well, you know, I'm 6 years post-op. I'm to all intents and purposes, everybody I know at work, outside in the real world, and, you know, I'm just Jenny, always was. I describe myself as semi-stealth in that, you know, I don't hide from it, but I don't draw attention to it. And, you know, I can honestly say that the surgery was not the life-changing part of transition. Transition itself was the life-changing part. You know, those first 8-10 months where you went through the big change, that when he became me, and you know, I became comfortable in living the life in a role that I was happy with, and all of a sudden I was able to you know, get on with the things that I always felt that I was prevented from doing because of this gender identity problem. But when it came to the surgery, I remember sitting there and thinking, do I need this? Is this the logical conclusion, or am I happy at the stage I'm at? And, you know, I thought long and hard, and I thought, if I don't go through this, I know I'll regret it. And I spent months agonizing over this decision. Am I doing the right thing? And in my case, I came to the decision that, yes, I was. But the actual surgery did not change anything. As far as people who didn't know I was trans by this point, who, you know, just knew me as Jenny, you know, I had a nebulous operation. I was off work for a period of a month or so, and outwardly, nothing changed. Nobody saw any different. You know, you don't go through your place of work going, look at me, I've got a vagina.
Or, and if you do, there's something wrong.
Either, or you work in a strip club.
But, well, there is that as well.
But no, it's and it kind of comes back to this. It's the actual surgery is a very private thing. It's about being comfortable for you, not for anybody else. And, you know, that even goes to, you know, if you've got a close partner, you shouldn't go through this because you think that's what your partner wants. It's got to be because of what you want.
Definitely. And shall we wrap this up then? Because I think we've gone over the same point a few times now.
Yeah, well, that's been the T-Vox podcast. And you can find more of these podcasts on www.t-vox.org.
I've been Zoe Kirk Robinson.
And I've been Jennifer Kirk.
And thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye.